This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Rebecca Thiel. Coming up, WMUK's Erlene McMichael talks with representatives from a cutting-edge credit union that's trying to repair people's credit and help them avoid high-interest payday loans. But first, National Drive Electric Week starts on Saturday. To raise awareness about the benefits of electric vehicles, owners of electric cars and motorcycles will be offering test rides in Kalamazoo, South Haven, and Hastings. For the past 3 years, the Southwest Michigan chapter of the Sierra Club has hosted the event. I talked with the Sierra Club's Ben Brown. So what is National Drive Electric Week, and why did Southwest Michigan Sierra Club get involved with this?
National Drive Electric Week is a week in September. This year it's from the 9th until the following week. And it is primarily the result of finding that people who actually own electric cars tend to know more about electric cars than dealerships, because most dealerships don't have day in, day out experiences with electric cars for a year or two at a time.
You know, electric cars have really changed in the past few years. More companies are making electric cars now, and also the price has dropped. How so?
Okay, well, we've gone, in 2010, I think there were roughly three major makers, producing them, Nissan, Mitsubishi, and Tesla. And we've gone from those three to, like this year, 40 different makers of some sort of plug-in electric vehicle. In terms of costs, the battery costs have dropped. I believe it was, about $1,000 10 years ago for a battery capacity. That same battery capacity is now $300, and the price is still dropping. And that's where the major cost of an electric car actually is in the batteries.
How is that translated to the cost of the car?
So I'm trying to think of an exact number. I'm going to have to give you a rough estimate. So in 2012, you could buy a Nissan Leaf for $32,000. That would give you approximately 80 miles of range, 80, 85 miles of range. Today, for roughly $35,000, and it may actually go lower than that, is what I've heard, you could get the same company's car, Nissan Leaf, that would have a range of approximately 160 miles. And they claim more, but I'm thinking roughly about 160 miles. So the batteries, their performance has improved, the size has improved. Some automakers actually are doing, not so much in the U.S., but in other countries, are doing exchangeable batteries. Because electric cars, the motor doesn't really degrade. There's nothing, there's no timing belt, anything like that. The main heart that you have to worry about are the batteries. So if you can exchange the batteries and get a higher upgrade in batteries, you're going to get more mileage. It's kind of like getting a new car.
I guess we should explain. So what is the difference between a hybrid and a plug-in electric?
Okay. You can have a hybrid that uses an electric assist motor. It doesn't actually push the car. But then when you have a plug-in vehicle that uses a motor to actually drive the car, there's a little bit of a difference. And then you have BEVs, which is battery electric vehicle, that relies only on batteries to actually move the car.
And then that's, you know, charged by an electric charger.
Right. It's charged by electric charger. And you can also have the battery assist car charged by an electric charger as well. And charging is, a lot of people don't realize there's three different types of charging possibilities. Actually, there's maybe four, but three is basic ones, which would be your 110 outlet, which is your normal wall outlet. You can often charge a car from that. There's also 240, which would be comparable to like your dryer. Some welders will use 240, and that's the public chargers you'll often see are 240. And then there's DC fast charging, and that's a real game changer. And that's much higher voltage. I don't know the exact voltage on it, but the difference in the three different charging levels are, like, for my car, has a 16-kilowatt battery. It would take me 16 hours if I'm plugged into the wall socket at home to charge it. If I plug into my level 2 charger, which is 240, it would take me 3.5 to 4.5 hours to charge it from empty. And if I plugged into DC fast charging, it would take me 15 to 20 minutes to refill that battery.
Plainwell at Midway Chevrolet is also getting a DC fast charger. You know, it's also called a DCQC. What does that mean, DCQC?
DCQC is direct current quick charging. And that's a real significant event in Michigan. There's a term called the electric highway. And the electric highway is when you have enough quick charging units to be able to travel interstate across the country is the big picture. And there are many states that have, mainly on the West Coast and the East Coast, but people are putting them across the country. And it will make even my car a car that can travel across states reasonably well. Tesla has its own system, which is separate from everything I've told you. And those are free at the moment for cross-country travel. And most people who own Teslas travel across the country frequently.
One other thing that has changed in the past few years is also how far you can go without needing a charge, right?
Right. 10 years ago, 60 miles, 70 miles would have been the tested range for an electric vehicle. Now we're looking at cars that can go 230 miles. We're talking about highway speeds on a charge. And the average at this moment for most electric vehicles is between 110 to 130 miles on a charge. Most people in a day, though, only travel about 30 miles both ways commuting to work. So it's more than ample.
Now, some people have said, well, what happens if we get more and more people buying electric cars and then we have everyone charging at the same time? Is it like if I were to plug in my hair dryer while running the washer and the circuit would cut out? You know, what happens?
I think that's really a fair concern. I don't think it's necessarily realistic because, well, let's say all electric cars plugged in at 5 p.m. all at once, all the air conditioners were on, that would make a huge peak load that utilities would have trouble keeping up with. But the potential of electric cars is this. They can charge when you're not driving them. And so you could, in theory, do off-peak demand. And a lot of utilities, especially California, the East Coast, they're realizing that is a tremendous money saving for them because they don't have to have additional generating capacity. And their generators are used much more efficiently. Their power sources are used much more efficiently, whether it's wind or solar or whichever. There's many different ways electric cars can actually save billions of dollars, actually, not only for the utilities, but also for the ratepayers. And so there's a lot of pluses like that. There's a term called flattening the duck, which is used when you look at peak demand. It actually looks like Donald Duck's head on a graph. And that's normally the peak demand is in the afternoon and the summertime, especially in our region, when everyone's turning on their air conditioners when they get home. But if you charge cars, let's say, during non-peak times, that peak in the duck's head begins to level out and actually becomes smaller because you spread the use or the demand for the utility out so they can operate more efficiently.
Electric cars are known for being green, environmentally friendly, but they still use energy. You know, why is this better to use energy generated by coal or natural gas rather than oil?
Well, some of that goes back to the fact of flattening the duck that I talked about earlier. So they have to have a baseline load all the time anyway, even if it's a coal-generated plant. And a lot of times that is energy that's not being used at night, and then it's being demanded heavily during peak hours, and they're having to buy a very expensive power. If they can use electric cars to level out the load, it saves them money and makes it more efficient to use. In addition, year by year, our generating capacity is becoming cleaner.
I did a little bit more research on this. According to the Scientific American, how green your electric car is all depends on where you get your energy from. If it's mostly coal, you could be polluting more than a gas vehicle. Natural gas generates about half the emissions, and renewables and nuclear power have little to no emissions at all. Consumers Energy customers in Michigan get a mix of 36% natural gas and 21% coal. The rest is mostly from renewable and other low-emission sources. As coal plants shut down, we'll likely see the environmental footprint of electric cars shrink, too.
We're actually using less coal. We're using less natural gas, even. In fact, wind and solar are becoming progressively cheaper and a great way to actually store energy, because sometimes you'll produce power and you don't have a need for it on the grid, but if you store it in your car, you've just made good use of that resource, and you don't have to buy additional battery sources or ship it across country to make use of that power.
Do you think that there has been a bit of a struggle with the electric market and how it relates to the big three, GM, Ford, and Chrysler?
There has been, I think, some concern on the big three automakers' part in terms of how that will change their business model, because it is a different business model with electric vehicles. And so I think there's been some resistance in some factions of the big three. In other areas, the big three has definitely contributed to a lot of research on expanding the electric vehicle market. It's actually kind of a dynamic situation at this moment, because you'll find the big three aggressively selling electric cars on the West Coast and the East Coast, but not so much in the Midwest. And the thing that was surprising even to dealers like manufacturers like Nissan is that there was such a huge demand for electric cars. They saw 3 years ago when we had our first electric drive week here, Nissan had seen the number of people that signed up to attend, and they actually sent a regional rep to find out if there was an interest in rural Midwest, at least from their viewpoint, rural Midwest. And they were so surprised, they said it actually bumped us up in terms of infrastructure support and even perhaps like rebates and things like that. And so there's more demand than people realize for electric vehicles, and I think like the big three are slowly catching on to that.
Now, I've heard that Detroit is actually doing some pretty innovative things with electric cars. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes. In fact, I think across our state you're seeing more and more support and investment. Cities like Detroit have committed to having 10% of their future fleets being electric vehicles.
Now, their fleets? What are we talking about there?
Like your city cars, like the city of Detroit will have their own vehicles. And that may be anything from police cars to parking cars, the parking administration. So 10% of those cars will be electric. And so they're moving in that direction. We have somewhere around 14 cities in Michigan have committed to the Paris Agreement. And to meet those goals, part of that will require them to have electric vehicles within their cities as well, support for that. So policymakers, some utilities, again, like DTE, consumers, and individual groups like our own groups are all moving to support electric vehicle adoption and understanding.
Ben Brown from the Southwest Michigan Sierra Club, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
The Southwest Michigan chapter of the Sierra Club is hosting events for National Drive Electric Week. It will be at the Hastings Library on Saturday, the South Haven Library on Monday, and at the Western Michigan University Physical Plant on Wednesday in Kalamazoo. All events are from 5 to 7 in the evening. For West Southwest, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Today we hear an update on the cutting-edge Community Promise Federal Credit Union, it debuted nearly 5 years ago in the economically challenged Kalamazoo's Edison neighborhood with the goal of helping low-income people repair their credit and to spur development in the area. The bank now boasts close to $850,000 in assets and 700 accounts, up from 50 its first year. Introduce yourselves.
I'm Angela Brown, and I'm the CEO at Community Promise Federal Credit Union.
And I'm Jim Houston. I'm the board chairman of Community Promise.
So it was in February of 2013 where you held an open house in the Edison neighborhood for the credit union. How soon after that did it open?
Well, actually, we opened for business on January the 2nd, 2013. We had just received our charter in October of 2012.
There were no financial institutions in the Edison neighborhood, is that correct?
That's correct.
There was not even a branch office of a bank, not even a drive-through.
Right. They left there some years earlier. So that left the neighborhood totally, what I want to say, at the disposal of the payday lenders, the rent-to-own people. So, and all of that, and that situation kind of spurred about a dozen people in the community at that time, kind of initiated by Monsignor Michael Hazard of St. Joe's and other community people to say.
And that's St. Joseph Catholic Church? Yes.
St. Joseph Catholic Church. So the citizens became very concerned that more and more people were falling prey to the, especially to pay their lenders. So the group decided that we would find a place in the neighborhood to put the credit union and kind of make it as kind of an anchor for some of the surrounding businesses in the neighborhood. And we have become an anchor. Pleased to say that the neighborhood now is on the rise. We've had a sub shop. We've had a very extraordinarily good restaurant, a Vietnamese restaurant now in the neighborhood. So I invite everybody to come and patronize it. The particular category of credit union that we fit into and that the NCUA designate us as a community development credit union for low income. So that put us in a totally different category, nonprofit. And as such, we're the only type of credit union that can receive grants and donations because of that particular classification.
Can you give a quick sense of why payday lending is a problem for those who might be economically disenfranchised? Why that might keep them in the cycle of being impoverished?
Okay, scenario. You are probably making $200-$300 a week, but you find out you don't have enough money to reach to the end of that week, so you go to a payday lender because you can't go to any other bank or credit union because your credit score is not high enough for them to give you a short-term loan. So, but these credit, these payday lenders are willing to, more than willing to loan you, say, $50, $60 to get you through the week or through the, you know, if you get paid every 2 weeks, But then you have to pay it back in 2 weeks. Well, if you're already short $60 or so, and you have to borrow again to get you through the next payday period, now you're about $120 or so in the hole. And all the time, they're charging you interest. So now you've been charging, you're paying interest on the first 60 plus interest on the second 60. And this interest rates can balloon up to 400% interest. And since you can't already pay all of this stuff, what's the other alternative? Bankruptcy.
Now, let's get to the core of the credit union. Ms. Brown, if you want to jump in at this point, what is fundamentally different? If I, you know, the customer walks into your facility, what's different?
So traditionally, the financial institutions, as Jim said, with people that are challenged with credit scores, they're not allowed to even open an account. So they have to go to a payday lender for loans. They have to go to check-and-go facilities to cash their checks. Some of the used dealerships in the area are charging exorbitant financing fees and interest rates. So as Jim mentioned, 400% interest on payday loans, check fees. We allow them to come in and open an account no matter what their situation is. There's no discrimination. We welcome them. Our mission is completely unique because we are actually trying to help individuals that are low to moderate income, especially challenged with credit, build their credit back up, teach them budgeting skills. How does this help the housing industry? Well, as you build your credit up, eventually things become more affordable because everything is based off of the credit score. So Let's say you start out with a very low score, under 600. As we help them build their credit score up, insurance is more affordable, rent is more affordable. Every loan that they get is more affordable, which increases their discretionary income. Eventually, we're helping individuals pave the way to get that score high enough to purchase houses.
Is there a minimum amount to start the account?
$5 deposit to open an account and a valid ID.
For check cashing, need someone have an account there?
You do.
How is that check cashing service different than, say, at some other bank?
The most we charge to cash a check is $3. Unless they have a compensating balance, then there's no fee. We also implemented a new checking account program for individuals that are not allowed to have checking or have had issues at other financial institutions. It's a second chance alternative program. And in that program, there is a monthly fee of $10 a month, but then we do not charge them any additional check cashing fees. So they can come in and cash 10 checks if they need to within the month, and the fee is waived.
What other types of services do you offer there that's different than other banks?
A lot of times individuals that want to purchase a vehicle will go out to a dealership and they'll find financing for them with, you know, challenged credit. What they're doing to people in the community is they're tacking on anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 in financing fees on the Blue Book price of the vehicle and then charging them 25% interest. So Community Promise, we never do that to individuals. We don't charge additional financing fees. We try to make sure that the price that they're paying for the car is a fair price, and then we give them fair pricing on the interest rates for the vehicle itself. So we have actually taken people out of predatory loans, such as I've mentioned, and gotten them into half of the payment, for instance. We have a new program. It's called Refi My Ride, and actually I have to give One Detroit Credit Union the credit for that program, because the CEO there, Hank Hubbard, and I had a discussion, and he shared this new program with me, and so now we're implementing it at Community Promise. And basically, if people are paying astronomical fees and interest rates and monthly payments, we will take them out of that loan and refi it. A lot of times, we can cut their payment in half. We can cut the interest rate in half. So we're doing everything we can to help them have more discretionary income and make life more affordable.
It's my understanding that you've been trying to establish some relationships with local auto dealers.
We've gone out to most of the local area dealerships and let them know that we are here to help people that have challenges with credit, to help them avoid that predatory lending situation that I spoke of, the financing fees, the 25% interest. And so what they're doing is they're actually sending individuals that are within the city of Kalamazoo to the credit union, and we are doing the underwriting and the financing for the vehicles at a fair price.
What kind of interest might someone be looking at if they go through financing with you?
We are as low as 2.75 for a paper and up to 14% for a challenge score versus 25% interest and $1,000 to $5,000 in fees.
How much of a loan do you give?
On used and new vehicles, we are financing up to $35,000.
And a person would have to have an account with you?
They have to have an account. They need to be a member to have access to the products and services. We are also offering a payday lending alternative loan, which an example of what Jim had mentioned was normally when you take a loan out, payday lenders charge you fees on that loan. It's about $15 for every 100. They make you pay it back in 2 weeks. So if you borrow, you know, $200, they charge you $30 in fees. Then you go back in 2 weeks. If you say, I can't pay it back, they roll that $230 over again, charge you another $30 in fees. And eventually it becomes that 400% interest. What we're doing is we're saying, let's say it's a $700 loan. We give them 12 months or longer to pay back loans, up to 5 years and up to $5,000 in personal loans. And for instance, the $700 loan would be $65 a month. And so we're giving them more room with their discretionary income to have time to pay that back and just make things more affordable.
Now, all these programs sound wonderful. How have they been working? Are people, in fact, making their payments?
They are. And we have seen wonderful situations of people that have been able to build their credit. They've gone from an under 600 score. They've built it up high enough where they can actually purchase a home. We have done credit building. We have a relationship building loan. We teach budgeting. We're doing everything to educate and help them pave the way to a brighter financial future.
When you say you teach budgeting, you now have classes now?
We do. Every individual that comes in, we sit down with them when they're filling out a loan application, and we go through their budget process. We can spend an hour or two or three or sometimes even 5 hours with an individual just trying to get them on track with their budget so that the bills are paid on time. They know exactly what's coming in as far as income, what's going out as far as their expenses. And by managing their income and paying timely, that also helps them build their credit.
Another thing that I understand is a priority at the credit union, I understand you're making inroads in trying to do outreach to the Hispanic community.
Yes, we are. We are actually the first credit union in Michigan to become certified as a Juntos Avanzamos credit union. Basically, what we're doing is we're offering fair products and services to the Hispanic community. We have literature in Spanish to help them for those that do not speak English or can maybe not read English. Because it's in Spanish, we can actually help them to understand what they're getting into.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Mr.
And by the way, two of our customer service people are fluent in Spanish.
What are you all most proud of in these, let's do the math, 4 years or so?
We're in our fifth year now.
Fifth year? You enter your fifth year. What are you proudest of in this period of time?
I think it has to really be our mission across the board. Knowing that you're helping change a person's life, we've helped people go from potentially being homeless. We've helped them go to the doctor, repair their cars. We pre-approve them for vehicle loans so that they don't have to get caught in that predatory cycle with the financing companies that are taking advantage of low credit scores. We have wonderful success stories of building people's credit and helping them learn to budget and manage their funds. Two of my favorite stories has to be the one with the person that was almost homeless, came in and said, "Angela, you don't realize what you did for me last year when you gave me that loan." And so I knew we did underwriting and we offered the person a loan, but what I didn't know was the place that they were living in was going to be, I believe, demolished. And they didn't have the deposit to get into a house elsewhere or an apartment. And if we had not offered that loan, they would be homeless. We've had individuals that have gone to dealerships in the past and have been taken advantage of with the low credit score and had a predatory loan that was unaffordable, had a week off being sick, maintained a job for many years, but had 1 week of illness and couldn't keep up with the car payment because it was almost $500 a month. What the predatory financing does is they say, okay, well, you have to pay me back that payment and the next one immediately, or they'll repo the car. So they take the car away from that individual, they can't get to work. So this person was paying 25% interest, came in upset one day, and sat down and talked with them and said, "Let me see if I can get you out of this loan." So I personally called up the financing company and said, "Let me refinance this. Let's talk about the balance, see if we can work out something agreeable." We were able to reduce the balance on that loan and get him out of a 25% interest, and I think he was paying 12 or 14%. And it literally took his payment from almost $500 down to about $250 a month. So it's these things that we're doing. We sat down afterwards, taught him how to budget, got him on a program where all the bills are being paid out of his account, everything's on time, and that individual came in originally quite stressed with the situation he was in, and afterwards, now he comes in and he's just a carefree, really happy individual. So you can see the difference in their faces. You know, you can see the difference in the way they look at you and how they smile and how they feel about themselves, and I think that's the rewarding part of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Angela Brown, CEO of the Community Promise Federal Credit Union, and Board President Jim Houston. The bank is investigating opening a branch in the Northside neighborhood in Kalamazoo. For a longer version of this story, visit wmuk.org. For WMUK's West Southwest, I'm Earlene McMichael.